Here's a quote for you. Between two pine trees is a door leading to a new life. Now, that's naturalist author, environmental philosopher John Muir. Here's another one. Tiptoe through the tulips. That's Tidy Tim. Just to give you something by way of contrast. What if nature, that's what we're talking about there, the simplicity of the outdoors, what if it could do more than simply lift our spirits? What if deep down it actually changed our deepest psychological wiring? Now, that quote, the John Muir one, not Tiny Tim, that pops up in a new book by Florence Williams, an American writer, and it's called The Nature Fix: Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. Florence joins us from Washington, D.C. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Now, we know this instinctively, that feeling of well-being in the natural world.
That's right. We know it instinctively, but I tell you what, we actually undervalue it. That's what the research shows. We tend to think other things will boost our moods, like eating a pint of ice cream or streaming Netflix or going shopping. And we don't really value the benefits of nature. So that's one of the projects of my book. I really wanted to point to the research that shows that it can actually change our brains, affect our moods, make us healthier in much more profound ways than we realize.
And that research is really interesting and really concrete. Before we get to that, the interest here, I think, for you was sparked in your own life change, moving from Colorado, the wilds there, the ready access to nature, to beautiful downtown inner city Washington.
That's right.
And how did that affect you?
Well, I had lived in the beautiful, idyllic Rocky Mountains for over two decades, and my husband took a job in Washington, D.C. And so we moved one very, very hot summer day, July day, into this, you know, hyper-urban environment where there were, asphalt buildings everywhere, very loud, overflying jets, terrible traffic. And what happened was I kind of flipped out, you know, on some level. I felt like this cortisol bomb, this stress bomb went off in my brain. I wasn't sleeping so well. I was anxious. You know, I would burst into tears in these traffic circles. And I just started to think about what I had lost, you know, in terms of my almost, you know, daily or hourly connection with nature. And then, you know, what did that mean for our brains when we switch environments like that?
What you'd lost and what you'd barely recognized having when you were in the thick of it.
That's right. I didn't really appreciate it until it was gone and until I started to feel so unhinged and really missing my nature fix. So then I wanted to explore the science, you know, and what it was saying about what I was feeling.
And the science is interesting, although, as you point out in the book, hard to sort of pin down into, you know, really rigorous studies. And yet, neuroscientists are piecing together some really significant things that happen to us in the natural world.
Yeah, that's right. The neuroscientists are now really able to take pictures of the brain and see what's happening inside the brain when we're in different environments. So for part of this book, I actually wore a portable EEG cap, which looks like a bathing cap on my head, in different settings. And I started to learn what the scientists were finding out. And that is really that parts of our brain, you know, in our sort of urban everyday lives get kind of overused, like our frontal cortex. That's the part of our brains that are, you know, constantly checking off our to-do lists and looking for parking spaces and multitasking with our devices.
Well, checking our devices constantly is
yes, thousands
reality.
Of times a day, even, right, exactly. And then when we go into nature, what happens is that part of our brain sort of takes a little break. It quiets down. Other parts of our brains get activated that are more associated with things like empathy, creativity, you know, long range, daydreaming and planning, what they call the default network, which is also something that sometimes gets activated, you know, with Buddhist monks, for example. And so in a way, nature, you know, is kind of this shortcut, a spiritual shortcut, something that we can access to make us feel better, improve our creativity without having to kind of necessarily learn the rigors of meditation.
And it does it physiologically as well, things like drops in blood pressure, for example.
Yeah, we can really measure these changes in our nervous systems. So blood pressure drops, our heart rate variability changes, our cortisol stress hormones drop off. And as a consequence, we begin to feel calmer, more relaxed, and our moods boost as well.
Why? I mean, how does what actually influences the brain and the body in that way about the natural world?
It probably has to do with the way our perceptual systems perceive stimuli. So our brains evolved in a natural setting. We evolved to process information from water, from vegetation, from weather. You know, these are what our brains are sort of optimized for. And so when we're in this environment, there's something that happens subconsciously where our brains are kind of in their sweet spot. You know, they're in their happy place. Whereas they're not, you know, when we're in the middle of an intersection or, you know, what I hate, the traffic circles, really setting off the stress alarms all over our brains and bodies.
What we're talking about here is the Nature Fix, which is the title of a new book by American writer Florence Williams. You're on Blueprint for Living. And what I'm wondering, Florence, too, I mean, you say this is the brain's happy place. Okay, so are we just not built? Are we not wired to live in these urban environments? Is that, are we retreating to what we find natural and comfortable?
I think that's an important question. You know, humans are incredibly adaptable. So we can live in these different environments, but maybe we're not doing it as well as we could be. You know, we're not necessarily giving ourselves the rest or the breaks, you know, that our brains need. Mm-hmm. I do think it's possible to live a happy, fulfilling life in a city. I love cities, but maybe we also need to recognize that our brains actually could use, you know, a little bit of an episode of looking at a tree or looking at a potted plant. And our bodies need to move and walk and swing from the trees when we're little. And these are things that, you know, we're just not getting enough of anymore. We're living in this epic disconnection from the natural world.
And maybe we've moved too quick. Maybe we've just gone into the city within half a dozen generations that humans have concentrated in concrete. It's a quick transition.
Right. It's a very quick transition, and it's one to which we are, I think, not paying enough attention. For example, if you look at our children today, the amount of time they spend outside compared to even my generation and then my parents' generation, there's been this just incredible, epic shift in how much time we're spending outside. And I just don't think we're remarking on it as much as we should be.
The other side of that is, of course, that we may adapt to this new way of living, that our minds, our sense of well-being may adjust to what the urban environment is doing to our psychology, to our brains as well.
We can adjust and we can adapt, but that hard wiring is many, many, many hundreds of thousands of years old, and it's not something that's really going to change overnight. So I think we need to just figure out how to kind of optimize, you know, these new environments that we find ourselves in.
Well, and presumably we can do that in the urban environment. I mean, this is the importance of having green space in a city setting.
That's right. And I think this is a really important conversation for city planners to be having, for schools to be having, for housing developments. There are ways to integrate sort of biophilic design or integrate nature into these institutions, into our cities. And when we do that, we really find that our inhabitants may not only be happier, but they actually may get along better.
Some governments are kind of seeing the benefit of this. Now, tell us about this Japanese idea of forest bathing.
Yes, forest bathing, or Shinrin-yoku, as it's called, is a practice being promoted by the Japanese Forest Agency just in the last couple of decades. You know, Japan industrialized incredibly late and very quickly. People are working incredibly long hours there. They're being kind of shoved onto subways. You know, it's a stressful life. And they need a break. They need an outlet. And so the Forest Service is encouraging office workers and families to get out into nature and forest bathe. And so what that is it doesn't involve, you know, taking off your clothes and rolling around in the twigs necessarily. But
Although that might work. I
mean. That might work. Might work for some people. It might freak out some other people. It really involves just engaging all of your senses. So being really mindful and putting your phone down, listening to the birds, looking at the fractal patterns in the leaves or the branches, you know, watching the water flow by, feeling the breeze on your cheek. Hmm. And what happens when you can engage your five senses outside, which is, by the way, not something we really do inside so much, that really can be a shortcut for calming down our nervous systems.
And it's that thing of engaging all the senses, as you say. I mean, like listening, having that sense of quiet and yet, oh, little bird. That true engagement rather than the bombardment, the sort of the passivity that we have sensually in the city.
That's right. And sound is a really interesting example because, if anything, we've conditioned our ears not to hear everything in the city. We don't want to hear the city. And so we walk around with our earbuds on. You know, we really create our own soundscape. Mm. And because of that, we may be actually losing our ability to discern kind of subtle sounds. And that's happening with our other senses, too. We're just not really using them the way they're supposed to be used.
You're hearing the subtle sound of Florence Williams. She's written a book called The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. I'm wondering about this, Florence, too, is how we untangle the many different things. So if I go for a walk in the forest, I'm exercising, for one thing. Yes, I'm in that forest. I'm in that open environment. But how do I work out whether is it the physical effort that's making me feel better? Is it the place that I'm in that's making me feel better? Is it the sort of meditative state that I get into, not having to think about things, focusing on the moment, being mindful? Is that what's making me feel better? How do we sort out just what it is?
I think you really hit upon an essential and sort of challenging question. I wondered the same thing. I thought, well, maybe, you know, this isn't just an exercise effect, because we know that exercise has been very well established as a way to kind of feel better, boost our moods, boost our immune system. And so when I went to Japan, I thought, well, maybe the forest bathing works just because people are outside exercising, walking around. But the scientists thought of that, too. They sent similar groups of subjects to walk around in a city. And to walk around in kind of different levels of nature. And they really only found these kind of nervous system benefits and these mood benefits in the groups that walked in the more forested areas.
I mean, there's a terrible conflict, isn't there, in our world between the need to make urban space, to make money out of open land, and then that need to keep that. And to see the value in that open country is it often a hard thing?
I think that we tend to think now of nature as being a luxury. You know, it's something for people who can afford to put their houses on the coast or on the golf course, and that's nice for them. Mm. But what the science is now showing is that really this is essential. It's essential for kind of being our best human selves, for really making us civilized. And so I think that's kind of an interesting contradiction, that we need nature to be civilized.
And yet civilization has always been about the repression of nature, about the subduing of nature, the paving over of nature.
Well, you know, it hasn't always been that way. I mean, even, you know, in ancient Mesopotamia, in ancient Persia, I think there was a lot of thought that went into, you know, designing gardens, for example, for people. We've always kind of encouraged, you know, wonderful parks and gardens, you know, again, especially if you had more resources. But I think now we are, you know, Frederick Law Olmsted, who designed Central Park in New York City, where I grew up, he really understood that it's all people, not just the wealthy, who need this in order even for democracy to function, for us all to be able to get along. And I think that's the level that we need to kind of really understand in order to move our cities to a livable place for the 21st century.
Yeah, a peace lily in the bathroom won't really cut it, will it?
Well,
I guess it's better than nothing.
But
is there a certain kind of environment? I mean, you know, the natural world is rich and varied place.
Is
a desert better for your brain than a rainforest?
What I found, it's so interesting, is there's a lot of variability, you know, among people. So I may love a forest, but someone else may love an ocean, whereas another person might feel really uncomfortable, you know, in the wide spaces of an ocean or a desert. So I think part of it has to do with, you know, where you spend some time as a child or, you know, what kinds of TV shows you like to watch. Was it Westerns, you know, or was it something else? So I think that there is a lot of variability. And in fact, this is interesting, too. There's a group of people, maybe 15% of people in a lot of these studies, who just will never be comfortable in nature. You know, they don't like the bugs. They don't like the wind. Yeah. They get anxious.
We all know
and they'll
these
never
people.
Relax. We all know these people. It was Woody Allen who said,
definitive.
He said, I love, Woody Allen, right there. He said, I love nature. I just don't want any of it on me.
Well, so what works for them? I mean, there must be people, and Woody Allen's an interesting example of that sort of stereotype of someone who is intensely urban, who would have these effects, I imagine, of psychological calm deep in New York, but not deep in Colorado.
Well, there certainly are ways to find deep psychological calm, you know, in the city. I mean, some people love, you know, going to a museum or listening to a symphony. Mm. You can really tick off a lot of, you know, happy boxes in your brain with those things. But they don't really reach into a full public health effect. You know, if you really want to reach large numbers of people, nature is free. It's available. It's a way to kind of increase the health of the entire population pretty quickly.
What should be our routine here? I mean, if I go for a nice walk in the forest today, how long is that going to have an enduring benefit for?
That's another question that I think scientists are really just starting to tease out. I met one researcher in Japan who found that walks in the forest increased our immune cells, our killer T cells, you know, which are so important for fighting cancer and other diseases. And he believes that those killer T cells, the boost lasts for about 7 to 21 days.
Wow.
So his recommendation is you need to go at least once a week. But if you can only go every 21 days, you'll still get a little bit of an effect. And then in Finland, the researchers there say, we think you need 5 hours a month minimum dose in order to ward off depression. So that's pretty specific.
Not just good for the brain, but good for the body too. That this is an interesting thing. The smell from some trees might help your immune system.
That's right. Researchers in Japan are looking specifically at the aromatic compounds that certain kinds of evergreen trees emit, specifically these hinoki cypress trees that are all over Japan. And they really have this wonderful smell. It's kind of like a Christmas tree meets VapoRub. And it's very invigorating.
Yeah, it would be. I'm trying to work that out. I can't help get this out of my head, though, Florence, that maybe we've got it wrong. I mean, in the city, that there's so much for us in nature in that more simple world that is so much better for us as people. We've taken a wrong turning.
I think we have to be careful, though, not to be kind of overly nostalgic about, you know, the way the world was, 100,000 years ago. It certainly wasn't always a friendly place.
We had bad teeth and terrible food.
We had bad teeth, you know, incredible infant mortality, right? Lots of bloody animals to eat. I think that there are a lot of wonderful, wonderful benefits to living in a city, including better health care, you know, better job opportunities, better opportunities for women, certainly. So, I think we just have to be smart about how we design our cities, how we live in them, and how we move forward from here.
And you're still in D.C., and you appear to be a happy, chirpy person.
That's because I had my walk this morning.
Well, where does your walk take you? What is your nature routine?
It depends on how much time I have. I love to go to the local parks. I'm lucky in Washington, D.C. We do have some beautiful parks. I take my dog usually for a 30-minute walk. Today I was in a big rush, so I chose some city streets to walk her that have a lot of trees. Hmm. And that's one of the tricks that I recommend in the book. If you have to walk somewhere, pick the route that's got the most trees. And then, you know, make an effort to actually look around and enjoy them.
take out the headphones, put the phone in your pocket,
exactly.
And have a look around you. Florence, fascinating and I think something that a lot of us can incorporate pretty easily in our lives to great benefit. Thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Florence Williams' book is The Nature Fix, Why Nature Makes Us Happier, Healthier, and More Creative. Now, here's the thing. I am sure, will have experience of this, the times that you've been out in nature, the things, where have you been? How's it made you feel better? Is it something that you need to incorporate in your life? How do you do that? Tell us. Shoot us an email, and we'll have a little look at some of those, perhaps read some out in our coming shows. Blueprint for Living, or one word, at abc.net.au. Blueprint for Living at abc.net.au. Tell us about your experiences in the great outdoors and how it's good for your head.